Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the EFL Fantasy Podcast. My name is Angus.
And my name is Dan.
And we're here to review the Game Week 34 action. An interesting game week, certainly. And I think it's thrown up quite a few things to discuss this week. But first things first, Dan, how are you?
Yeah, not bad. Obviously, Luton didn't have a game, so it's quite nice to have a weekend off. Gaffer went okay. I'm sure we'll get into it. Really interesting week throughout the league and in the championship from top to bottom. So, yeah, let's dive in and talk about it.
Yeah, so first things we'll sort of get into our teams. We'll do sort of, you know, the team news. We've got a few key points to cover and we'll answer the questions you guys have sent in. So first part is looking through our teams. I'll go first. I somehow managed to get a green arrow this week, despite numerous things making me think I wouldn't. So I got 53 points, which was a green arrow. I think there were lots of scores in the 50s this week. So I had Pears in goal over Hazard, which Hazard actually outscored Pears, which I wasn't expecting. Giles for 10, Walker Peters for 2, Davis for 4, Dewsbury Hall for 5. I actually vice-captained Azaz, which was 1 point. Philogene 4, Somerville 2, Rutter 12, Captain Adam Armstrong for 2, Kiefer Moore 7. I had Carvalho's 11 points sitting first sub. And I'll fess up to it now. I wanted to change my armbands. It wouldn't have been much better. I wanted to go to Azaz, actually captain. Somerville vice-captain. But I forgot that the Coventry-Preston game was actually happening. So I thought it was a 6:30 deadline because of the Leeds-Leicester game at 8 o'clock. So I had to change it 20 past 6 and obviously wasn't able to. It wouldn't have gained me a lot of points. It would have gained me like another 1 point or something. But it's just sort of, you know, I mean, I'm sure Coventry fans would like to forget that the Coventry-Preston game happened as well. But So that was fun. And obviously, Carvalho first up. But, you know, it was really tough going into it. Like, obviously, you know, Azaz has come out of it with a one-pointer and, you know, Armstrong didn't start and whatever. And Somerville blank. But it was a tough call. I knew there was the risk I was taking in terms of someone scoring well on the bench. And, you know, Carvalho has obviously scored a great goal, which cost me a little bit. But ultimately, it was still a green arrow for me. I'm moving ever closer to getting back in the top 100. So, yeah, quite pleased in the end, actually. How about you?
So I got 54 this week, a green arrow, about 10 places up to 119th. I had 2 free transfers, but I only made one and I rolled the other. I did Azaz in for Carvalho, so I... At least I don't have to look at his points on the bench. I just got rid of him completely. Very similar team to you, Angus. Pears 4, Giles 10, Walker Peters 2, Davis 4, I vice-captain Somerville for 3, Philogene 4, Azaz 1, Dewsbury Hall 5, Rutter 12, I captained Armstrong for 2, who was benched, and Kiefer Moore rounding off the team. So, yeah. I've got 2 free transfers, but I'm pretty happy with my team for this week. So it might be something like one of my bench defenders upgrading or getting rid of a goalie or something like that. Because all my players have good fixtures. So, yeah, I wanted to punt something, but it just doesn't seem worthwhile at the minute. So, yeah, I'm in a good position if, like, an injury occurs and I can make a move. But, yeah, happy with a green arrow.
Yeah, and obviously we're talking about that. Just worth reminding people, there's the FA Cup this coming week. I think it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, at least for the championship teams. I don't know if there's anything on Thursday, but I think it's just Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So don't go early on your moves, particularly because I think a couple of the important ones for gaffer purposes are playing on Wednesday in Leeds and Southampton, so certainly wouldn't be going too early with your moves this week. But yeah, so obviously, so Green Arrows and everything, you know, positive. So next thing we'll get on to is the team news. So Dan, take it away.
Yeah, so the key Gaffer-related team news this week, Lester Pereira started centre, Mitch Choudhury was right back. West Brom, Dean Garner and Johnston were in. Swift and Vyman were bench. Wallace was the striker. QPR, Chair started. God knows what's happening with him in his personal life. Is he going to prison? We'll have to wait and see. Jimmy Dunn's playing at right back. So I've got Cannon and he's, I don't know if he's been dropped or what it is, but yeah, Jimmy Dunn's playing right back. Hodge and Frey were in for Anderson and Dykes. For Borough, they went back to a back four after they'd played five at the back against Leicester. Force and Thomas were in. Plymouth, Mumba was benched. Ipswich, Twanzabi played right back. I think Clark's injured. For Norwich, Barnes and Hernandez were benched. For Watford, Dennis started. Sunderland, Clark's injured. So they switched to a 3-4-2-1. Styles came in at left wing back and Bellingham and Barr played as 10s. For Southampton, Walker Peters played left back. Stevens came in. As we've already mentioned, Armstrong was bench. Brooks and Adams started. So, yeah, that's basically it.
Yeah, so a couple of interesting things. I mean, I did say to you and a couple of other people, I did have a sneaking suspicion that Adam Armstrong might be benched. And then I was still slightly surprised to see him actually on the bench. But yeah.
I'm not sure he'll be benched this week, though.
I know sort of seeing before there was a lot of conversation about how much he needed a break, how sort of tired he's looked. Obviously, he was hooked at half time in midweek, but I do think hopefully from their point of view that's sort of like the rest he needed, because they're going to need to bounce back from what was a bad week. We'll go on to our first sort of key point then, which is the Leeds Leicester game from Friday night. Obviously it was sort of the big game of the weekend. You know, it was the one everyone was looking forward to. You know, were we going to sort of have a title race? Was it going to be over? And strange feeling coming out of this one, I think we can agree. Obviously, Leeds fans every right to be positive about it. But I think we were saying, you know, Leeds will obviously feel very positive because they got the result out of it. But, like, we also felt quite positive about Leicester in the game, generally speaking.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but I thought Leeds would win this game.
Yeah.
I mentioned to you, I thought they'd easily cause Leicester problems on the counter, and it was actually the other way around, which I didn't really expect. But yeah, I was watching it, and I've watched Leicester a few times, but because other teams set up so differently against them, you don't know truly how good they are against the top sides, and they haven't had a great record points wise against the top sides. Like they keep dropping points very late on. They've done it twice against Ipswich, but yeah, watching this side, I know they missed chances, and we'll probably get into that, but I thought Dewsbury Hall was brilliant. You know how much I like Dewsbury Hall anyway, but yeah, he just looked a level above everyone else on the pitch, I thought, on Friday night. I was worried with the Choudhury against Somerville, but he done quite well. There was one incident in the first half where I think the keeper had to make a save. But yeah, I was really impressed with Leicester. They scored from a set piece. Fass scored the goal. And I know you want to talk about the disallowed goal. Angus, don't you?
Well, I just think, you know, it's one of those things we talk about it, and I'm certainly not advocating for VAR, but
yeah,
they've scored a second perfectly good goal that's been disallowed. And, like, I can't remember which of the useless COCOMs was on that game.
Hinchcliffe?
I want to say it was Hinchcliffe, who was trying to find a way that, like, it was understandable why the linesman had disallowed it. And it was like, no, it just looked like it came off Rutter's midriff and Dacca's sort of put it in, and that's what happened. And he's just given offside. And it's, you know, it's one of those things where if it goes 2-0, you know, everything's different. Like, even if Leeds score, they're still behind, you know. Does it go the same way? Is the same level of momentum where Leeds scoring the goal and equalising, it was suddenly like, right, it's with them and everything. Where I think if Leicester had been 2-0 up, it might have gone differently. And I just think it's one of those where, you know, it's not to sort of say, oh, Leeds, you know, I was joking about like sort of Leeds, you know, being the only ones who get all their goals counted and whatever. But like, it's just one of those where it's such a key moment in that game. If it goes 2-0 with a perfectly legitimate goal, you know, it could go very differently and we could be having a very different conversation. So I just thought, you know, it was a key part of it.
Yeah, I agree with you. And then we had a stage where Leeds made a couple of subs. I think the subs did work. Maybe not initially with Dan James and Bamford coming on. But Mavadidi and Dacca had two great chances one-on-one. I don't know what Dacca was trying, especially all he's got to do is open his body out and he'd have just side-footed the past the goalie, but he tried to, I don't know what he was doing.
I'm not sure he knows what he was doing, which is probably half the problem.
it was weird because overall, I thought he had a very good game. He held the ball up well, was linking very well throughout the game. It makes it crazy that he wasn't playing at the start of the season for whatever reason. He just didn't play for about 3 months, did he? But
yeah,
really bad misses from Mavadidi and Dacca. And then Leeds gradually, as you mentioned, got a bit of momentum. Roberts scored. And then Archie Gray with a massive deflected goal. And then it's, you're not getting back into it at Elland Road, are you? And then to sum it up, the third goal with James hitting it at Bamford, it hitting his knee and then going in, which I was very glad at. Because I, as soon as Bamford and James came on, I bet on Leeds to win and Bamford to score. So it was a nervous half an hour wait while I was waiting for Bet365 to pay up. But they didn't win.
Yeah, I mean, I'm amazed that Archie Gray has still been given that goal. To me, it looked quite clear it was going wide before the two deflections. You know, and I far preferred the narrative about Fast scoring at both ends at the same end of the ground. It stayed with Gray. And like you say, then to follow that up with that sort of significant deflection, the Dan James free kick is going wide until it hits Bamford and goes in.
The funny thing is Bamford knows it's hit his knee, so he goes off and celebrates on his own.
Yeah.
And then Dan James is obviously celebrating with everyone else.
But I think there were three players I wanted to highlight from this game. One of them you mentioned was Dewsbury Hall. For the first sort of 75 minutes, I thought he was playing a different game to basically everyone else. But I thought for a lot of the game, Yannick Vestergaard actually did very well sort of cleaning things up at the back for Leicester. Obviously, he doesn't do well on the first goal. He sort of lazily sticks a leg out and actually ends up just sort of knocking it into the path of Connor Roberts to finish. But I thought generally he did quite well. And the other one from about the 70-minute mark, I want to say, was Jorginho Rutter. He just took the game into his hands and was like, no, I'm going to make something happen now. And he was just excellent. And, you know, it helps having players like that where you can sort of turn the tide of a game. But for him to show what he did and just be, you know, make the most of that situation as well. Once it started turning, he just got more and more influential. And so I just thought, yeah, he was the other one, just massive difference. We know how good he is, but, you know, just seeing him sort of almost take over like that was really impressive.
Do you think Leicester are lacking a bit of squad depth? Because you see Leeds, they brought on James, who basically played every game at the start of the season. Bamford, who's done well the last couple of months. Obviously, Connor Roberts has been one of the best right backs over the last few years in this league. And Leicester brought on McAteer and Cannon, and then it drastically went downhill from there. I know they've got Vardy and Iheanacho out, but do you think they're a bit light? Are you worried about Leicester getting over the line?
Yes. I think it's, you know, unlike the first time these two teams met where Leeds just looked like the better team, I thought Leicester probably were better in this game, but I thought the timing of the substitutions didn't help, and the substitutions themselves I don't think helped. I was surprised. I know that, like, you know, he'd sort of put in a lot of work or whatever, but at that moment in time, taking Daka off didn't feel great. I think was the other problem there. And yeah, McAteer, I'm not sure what I think of McAteer. I think he's a useful player, but, you know, I probably would have wanted from him someone like Dennis Pratt. I thought Ricardo Pereira was very good in midfield, but at that point, I think if you're looking to sort of change things up a bit, and even once it started turning for Leeds, like, get someone like Dennis Pratt with a bit of experience on the pitch. You know, I felt like that sort of thing could have made a big difference. Even, like, not saying he's great, but even getting someone like Connor Cody on the pitch, like,
yeah, leadership
could have made a difference. And so I think there was a little bit about the substitutions themselves as well as the depth. But yeah, it's open. And I thought, you know, Leicester, it's sort of been, you know, even when they were picking up results, it was like, okay, they're sort of, they've got a decent lead, but are we sure they're, you know, significantly better than the others? If a couple of teams start getting close to them, could it get a bit hairy? And, like, I'm not quite there yet, but, like, I do think that there's an opportunity that, you know, they could be caught at this point.
I don't know. I went in, like I mentioned earlier, I went into the game thinking Leeds would win this game quite comfortably. And I know they did win it, but the performances made me just think Leicester will just find a way against the teams down the bottom. They'll just comfortably beat him, I think.
Yeah, I think they've got an upcoming little run that's not great, fixtures wise. They've obviously got QPR at home, which they should win, although QPR have sort of obviously improved. Sunderland away, Hull away, Southampton at home. Like, that's a little run where in the next four where it's like, it's not great. But, you know, for example, I think they're 6 points clear now. If they came out of that run still 6 points clear or more, you'd sort of back them then to get there, to get to the end. Because after that, sort of they have one or two more tougher games. But in general, it's sort of like they've got most of their tough games out of the way at that point, if they've still got that sort of gap at that point. So yeah, I think I was still impressed enough by them in that game that it was sort of like, oh yeah, on another day they've got three or four, and we're having a completely different conversation about, you know, they're going to be champions or whatever. And I know it's how it works. Like, they didn't, Leeds sort of came back, but I think it just makes me feel slightly better about Leicester than I would have if it had been the same as the first time they played, where it was sort of like Leeds are clearly better than Leicester. I also, I'm going to shout out the stat I put out on Twitter just because I really enjoyed it, that Leicester have only lost consecutive games twice this season, and it was to Leeds and Borough both times. Which also shows, you know, is it another blip, where I think they went on a run after that happened the first time as well. So it's just sort of like, you know, that it could sort of be like, okay, now they're going to sort things out. And be all right. On the Leeds side, I thought it was interesting. I will say, he's obviously come on and got the first goal, and Archie Gray has scored the second. Thought Archie Gray struggled for a lot of the game with Mavididi, and I think it's becoming a bit of a pattern. And it's not to fault Archie Gray, you know, he's doing a job out at right back, but particularly when teams have a capable player on that side, Archie Gray, like they do sort of look to target him a little bit. You know, I don't think Firpo was great on the other side either, but there was a little bit of a pattern there, and Mavididi was having joy. And I think, you know, part of the problem was they looked to push Gray higher, to push Mavididi back. Mavididi went with him, but then was getting away from him on the counter. So it was sort of like, that didn't quite work. And so I think, you know, it feels like we might be getting close to Conor Roberts soon. I don't know sort of what your thoughts are on that specifically.
Yes. It's harsh, isn't it? Because he's done brilliantly. I think,
yeah.
I think, is he still 17, 18?
I think so.
Yeah. And let's be honest, his natural position is centre mid, which I don't think he's going to get back in there with Kamara and Rulev in there. But yeah, for him to have been this consistent, because he's basically been playing the whole season and he hasn't looked too much out of place. But yeah, I agree. You might get a bit of rotation coming there, I think.
Yeah, that's probably more like it. In terms of some of these games, you're going to look at it and be like, you know, do you really want Archie Gray at right back in this game? Like, I mean, I still think back to like Liam Miller, what Liam Miller did to him when they played Preston. And then obviously he struggled in this game. So I do think maybe some of these teams where they have sort of a really strong player on the left-hand side, do you then look to play Conor Roberts in those games and that sort of thing? I've mentioned Rutter. I thought Somerville was decent in this game without sort of being what he normally is. But I thought on another day, there were a couple of times where he went close and it was sort of like, on another day, he's, you know, he's coming away with a return. Thoughts on Nonto? Because I know people were sort of ahead of this game, people were really keen to get him.
I've mentioned to you a couple of times, didn't I? I know I have Rutter and Somerville, but I did think like it could be quite a nice differential to go Somerville and Nonto, but he didn't play well. Dan James is back. You've got Anthony, who hopefully will be back in the squad now after it. The death of his relative. So yeah, I'm not sure if I can go Nonto now at the minute.
Yeah, I think if he'd played a bit better, he would have kept the place, but he almost dropped off just enough, and then Dan James obviously making a couple of things happen when he came on just sort of complicates it again, in terms of it might be that a couple of weeks time we can sort of be like, yes, it's Nonto, or yes, it's Dan James. But right now, if I were buying one this week, I would be like, I don't know. So that's the slight issue there. Somerville and Rutter, I'm surprised. Like, I know a lot of people sold Rutter, and I'm sure they're looking at getting him back. Those two seem the obvious ones. Do you have any particular thoughts that if people were like, I need to have a third Leeds, do you have any particular thoughts on who that should be?
No, I don't think so. I think you could maybe go a defender, but like, I'm so happy with my defender. I've got Giles, he's doing well at Hull. you know what he can do in the championship. Walker Peters and Davis, I'm not losing. And I've got two. I know I'm going to start those three near enough every week. So I've pretty much cheaped out on my other two options. I've got Cannon, who's 4.5 or 4.6. And I've got Fainwu, who's basically 4 million. It's just one less decision I have to make every week.
Yes, I think what a lot of people would be hoping for would be for Connor Roberts to get into the team. People can go Firpo. I have a long-standing sort of dislike of Junior Firpo.
They obviously Farker obviously took Firpo off and put Gray over. Do you think we could see that?
Possibly. I also think there's thoughts that Byram might not be out for that much longer, which just complicates things as well. I think at the moment, if I were going for a defender, if you were buying this week, I'd probably go with like Ethan Ampadu. But you know, it's tough at the moment. It might just be just go with Rutter and Somerville and sort of, you know, then pick accordingly. And on the Leicester side, everyone sort of has Dewsbury Hall. Is there anyone else that you would be sort of either looking at yourself or advising people to look at from them?
I've had Mavididi in and out throughout the season. I think if Pereira continues in the centre mid, he could be a very good option.
Yeah, I think he's a decent option at right back, but I think that sort of the way he played in midfield, it could be sort of, you know, really good option.
Yeah.
And to give him credit, or to sort of make an excuse for him from this game, his booking might be the worst refereeing decision of the season.
Why do they do this when they get Premier League refs down to this? I know they're supposed to be better, but
I don't even understand how he's come to that decision. I don't get it.
He didn't even go through the player.
No,
really,
no. He's just messed up. But yeah, I still think Pereira is a decent option, even if he goes back to right back, because generally speaking, Leicester defence is going to be a decent option. I still like Fass. You know, he seems to be the one from a set piece. I know Vestergaard hit the woodwork on the Dakar disallowed goal, but he seems to be the one from a set piece. I also like the fact that you'll see at least a couple of times a game him just go on one of these 30-40 yard runs, and you're like, I'm not even sure how he's beat these players, but he has. But I'm not sure, I'd go for him over sort of Pereira, who I think is the obvious second choice. Daka, if people are looking around, particularly those, you know, if people have just decided they don't want Armstrong anymore, or they've got another issue or whatever, what do you think of Daka?
You can't go there though, can you? I think he probably is first choice now, but I know Vardy's injured. I think he's ahead of Cannon. If it continues like just him and Cannon for a while, it might be worth it.
Yeah, I mean, there was no warning of Vardy and Iheanacho being out before the game, but obviously they weren't in the squad. Yeah. So it's also a bit of clarity on what the situation is there before you would go there. But I do think you're probably not looking at one of their strikers. Anything else on this game? Because we've gone quite deep on it. I can't think there's much more that needs covering. No. Is there anything else you can think of from this game?
No,
so, to sum up what we said at the start, it does mean that now, you know, title race is very much on. Still have to include Ipswich, who are obviously level on points with Leeds. Southampton's going to be a struggle after their bad week, but, it's certainly competitive at this point. So we'll move on to our next point, which is you have a team that you want to talk about.
Yeah, Preston. Now, normally about this stage of the season, Preston about 10th to 14th, and they're not really interesting. But over the last five games, they've won four, drawn one, and they're 3 points off the playoffs. And I wanted to see like how they're setting up and see, have a look at the data to see if it's sustainable. So for a while now, Preston have been playing 3-4-1-2, and it's had a pretty settled lineup. There's been the odd change, but the lineup is Woodman in goal, Story, Lindsay, Hughes in the back three, Miller one wing back, and it's, I think it was Potts, but he's been injured, so it's sort of been Brady. Yeah. And I think the game just gone, it was actually Brown played out there. And they brought a centre mid in. Normally the two centre mids are Whiteman and Brown, and they've had Frocky Jensen behind Emil Reese and Keane up front. And we had a stage earlier on in the season where he just couldn't decide what striker was playing, what formation he was playing. But he seems pretty settled on this. And they've been, like I mentioned, they've had the odd change, but that's mainly been down to injuries. So I looked a bit further in. They've scored 12 goals in five games, conceded five. So you're like, oh, that's really good. I then looked at the data. I know it's only five games, but their XG is five, and the XG conceded is six. So they've massively overachieved on their goal scoring wise. Defensively, it's pretty much aligned. So, yeah, I've not really thought of Preston for a long time, and I was surprised to see that Keane was on 12 goals for the season. And what makes me laugh is you look at the top goal scorers, and there's not many like out and out strikers. They're all like wingers this year, or players who can play out front. So you've got Smodic, Whittaker, and it goes down. And he's probably, him and Ryan Hardy are probably the out and out strikers. And you're thinking, well, they're not playing for a top side. But, yeah, Preston don't have the easiest set of fixtures coming up. They are the next four. They're home to Hull, away to Southampton, home to Stoke, and away to Plymouth. So they're not excellent fixtures, but they found a way of playing. And I like some of the players you've already mentioned. Miller, causing Gray some problems. I like him. I think we've seen previously that Emil Reese will score goals. Obviously, he had that terrible injury, but he's scored a few the last few games. They've got a settled back three. Woodman seems to be back to his best of a couple of years ago. So it just seems like a really solid team. They seem to be trusting Frakke Jensen behind the front two now. So, yeah, I'm not sure I'm going to bring any in, but I think they're definitely a team maybe to look into. I don't know what your thoughts of Preston. I'm not sure if it's sustainable either. But
yeah, I mean, everyone knows my general feeling on Preston is they are sort of the existentially 12th place in the Championship team. And it still wouldn't surprise me if they ended up there. But I do think they've been very good recently. I was actually discussing with Luke earlier, and because he asked me a question. And funnily enough, because I knew Preston had done well, I knew the answer. And there are three teams who have 13 or more points in the last five games in the Championship. And it's Leeds, Ipswich and Preston. And so they're clearly on a very good run. I think it's tough to sort of look at them at the moment, particularly with that next couple, and be like, oh yeah, I'm going to go into them. But I think possibly the other side of that, particularly with the Stoke game, it presents an opportunity to be looking at them. Someone like Lindsay, who clearly ticks over very nicely. Like you say, I think Frocky, Jensen, Miller, I do like Reese, and I do like the fact that he seems to be really have built up his minutes now, to the point where he can sort of regularly play deep into games. And I think that's going to be important for them if they are going to make any playoff charge. Like, Will Keane has obviously done very well for them this season, but I think someone like Reese is going to have to play a significant role if they are going to make a sort of playoff push. But yeah, I think for me, they're worth watching because they're a team very much in form, but I'd probably wait until after this next two. But they're a team that you can be keeping an eye on now. Like, they have put together this run, and once they get those couple of games out of the way, like, you know, it's Stoke home, it's Plymouth away, then it's Rotherham at home, Birmingham away, sort of Watford away, Huddersfield at home. It's a decent run to have someone or someones from them. So I do think it, like you say, not necessarily the best timing, but there's certainly one to keep looking at and, you know, maybe sort of working out when there's the opportunity. Okay, who do you want from them?
Yes, just on Emil Reese, in the last five games, he's got 4 goals and an assist. And we know he can score goals in this, at this level. So, yeah, would you go Miller? I know he's playing wing back.
I'd still be tempted. I wouldn't be put off by the fact he's playing wing back. But I just think at the moment there's too many good options. Like, I'm struggling to get all the options I have into the team. And so it's like, you know, is Miller one that I really want to go for? It might be that come sort of game week 36, I think it is, 37, sorry, that I'm looking at it and, you know, you sort of have someone like Miller against Stoke and it's just like, yeah, I'm going to go there. Like, you know, I'll mention sort of one or two later who I'd sort of said, oh, yeah, it's a short-term move or just play the fixtures move and go for it then. It might be that come that week, Miller is that option and you just go for it. But yeah, I wouldn't be put off by him playing wing back.
Yeah, it's basically it on Preston. Yeah. They've got more coverage than they normally do at this time of the year.
Yeah, that is very true. I normally have to be steered to talking about Preston. So, you know, we've given them a little bit of attention there, like you say. So the final point is, obviously, there's a lot of talk at the moment with some of these teams at the bottom picking up points about who's actually going to go down. And so I just wanted to look at the teams down at the bottom. Well, I've not included Rotherham. I apologise to any Rotherham fans that listen to us, but I struggle to see them being sort of really relevant in this conversation. So started at Plymouth on 40 points, and I've gone down to Sheffield Wednesday with 32 points. So there's a group of 9 teams there. Plymouth on 40, Blackburn and Swansea on 39, Birmingham on 38, Huddersfield on 37, Millwall on 36, QPR and Stoke on 35, and Sheffield Wednesday on 32. Just to get an idea of where they're heading or where they've been heading, what we might be able to take away from some of it, and that sort of thing. So I've looked at just some basic statistics, which is their record in their last 5 games, and in those games, goals scored and goals against. So firstly, in terms of the form in the last 5, the best team of the lot in terms of points picked up in that period is QPR. We've picked up 10 points, 3 wins, a draw and a loss. They're also one of only 3 teams in this group who have a positive goal difference in their last 5 games. Now, a couple of them, it is skewed by one particular game. Look at this, Sheffield Wednesday have a game goal difference of -1 in their last 5, but that includes their 4-0 loss to Huddersfield, was the first of the 5 games. So, but QPR obviously have done very well. We've talked about them and how well they've been performing, and they've picked up those results. A couple of them against teams down at the bottom, which has obviously made them even more significant. Then on 9 points, you have Huddersfield and Sheffield Wednesday, who've won 3, lost 2. Huddersfield have a positive goal difference in that time period. Sheffield Wednesday, like I said, -1, but is skewed by that Huddersfield result. Yeah, Blackburn, Birmingham and Swansea on 6 points. They've gone about it slightly different ways. Birmingham and Swansea have won two and lost three in that time. Blackburn have won one, drawn three and lost one in that time. Blackburn have certainly recently been struggling to get results. Then you have Plymouth on 4 points. They've won one, drawn one and lost three. And it's worth it. They have a goal difference of minus five in that five-game period. Millwall and Stoke both picked up 3 points in that time period. Obviously, Millwall just got their 3 points, which is their only win in that period. Stoke, it was against QPR, actually. But they also have the worst goal differences of those. It's obviously, part of that is because you've lost more games, which are adding a minus to it, or contributing to the minus, minus seven for Plymouth, minus eight for Stoke. I'm not sure that would be too surprising for people, particularly in terms of recently, you know, the three better teams being QPR, Huddersfield and Sheffield Wednesday, and the two sort of particularly bad ones, I guess, being Millwall and Stoke. But I also wanted to look a little bit at how that's come about, which is why I've just used goals scored and goals conceded. I didn't have time to get down into some of their expected data and whatever. It would have taken too much time sort of accumulating it. But in terms of goals scored in the last five, Huddersfield have 11. Now, obviously, as I said, this includes the 4-0 against Sheffield Wednesday. But that does still mean they scored seven in the other four. So they are scoring plenty of goals. There was a three against Southampton in there as well. Next is QPR on seven. Blackburn and Sheffield Wednesday have six. Plymouth have five. I was quite interested by that because we normally think of them as scoring quite a few goals, but only five for them. Swansea and Birmingham have four. Millwall and Stoke only have three. On the flip side, you know, it's a lot of the same teams. QPR and Blackburn are actually the best for goals conceded with five. Which was an interesting change, actually, with Blackburn, because we've talked before about them conceding goals. In this recent run, it's actually been about not conceding goals. QPR, not surprising. We've talked about their defensive solidity. Sheffield Wednesday and Birmingham next with seven. Swansea and Huddersfield with eight. Plymouth and Millwall with 10. And Stoke with 11. We've talked about being concerned about Stoke and about Millwall. They're a bit tougher to read because obviously they've just changed the manager, brought back Neil Harris. But they've been the two most concerning, and I think it shows there where you look at basically every stat and it's Millwall and Stoke at the bottom. I'll just pick out a couple of sort of things that jumped out to me from that as well before I sort of come to you. One of them was about Plymouth's goals conceded. They're still conceding lots of goals. I think we've talked about that before, but 10 goals conceded across the last five games. And the other one for me was just sort of getting into the Huddersfield goals scored. I know I said that it was boosted by a couple of games, but that they are picking up those goals, I think is an interesting thing to bear in mind. They are still shipping goals at the other end. Like they still conceded eight across the five games while scoring 11, but 11 in the last five games is something to be noted. What are your thoughts on, well, any of those numbers or just about these teams more generally?
Yeah, so I think it's been clear, especially for QPR and Sheffield Wednesday, they've been a mid-table side pretty much since they've hired the two managers. Yeah. And they've had to be to give themselves a chance because they were massively behind. Huddersfield's interesting because throughout the season that they've not lost loads of games, they just draw a lot. I think that was under Moore. They did have a terrible injury crisis as well, which I don't think was that well known. It's really tricky to know who's going to go down because you look at QPR and they've just got out of the relegation zone, but then you look at their next set of fixtures and they got Leicester, West Brom, Middlesbrough, Sunderland, Birmingham. You're like, they might not get any points or they might only get one or two, and you probably think they're back in it. I think it's similar with Stoke. They have a tricky one. Borough, Leeds, Preston, Norwich, Hull. Sheffield Wednesday are probably quite interesting because they play Rotherham this week. Massive. You've got to win that any game against Rotherham, really. They've got Rotherham and Plymouth next. Two games where you think they could easily get 4 points and they'll be close. Obviously, there's still 3 points from safety. Plymouth are interesting. I think we sort of mentioned it the other week that since they've got the new manager and they made all those changes, although we like some of the signings they've made, it's obviously taken them a while. And whether the players have been like, I'm not sure they've replaced Azaz as well as they could, or Kesler Hayden, or players like that. So, yeah, that is a worry, because if they stop scoring goals and they're conceding two goals a game, they're going to drop down the table fast. They do have a 5 points gap, so you'd like to think that not all those teams would catch points up. But yeah, do you think it's going to be like 44 to 46 to stay up this year? Because it seems like quite a high points total this year.
Yeah, I know generally speaking, particularly all the managers have been talking about getting to 50 points, like you need to get to 50 points. Yeah. I think it's probably going to end up being sort of 45-ish. You're probably going to need, particularly just with the number of teams down there, all sort of battling it out. I think it's going to sort of, you know, it's going to require a decent points total to stay up.
Throughout those teams, if you've got assets against them, which ones are you targeting? Because like we said, although Sheffield Wednesday, QPR are near the bottom, they've been acting like mid-table sides. Is that putting you off targeting them?
So I've sort of shied away from it a little bit, just because I've sort of been aware, particularly sort of like the attackers against Sheffield Wednesday, they've had the odd bad game, but it's sort of been like, okay, this isn't a great fixture for them. Them, it's been a little bit more sort of targeting with defenders, similar with QPR actually, where it's like I'm happy with defenders against them. I don't necessarily want to be sort of going big on attackers against them, and so I think that's probably going to stay the same. Millwall, you know, obviously I've said they haven't scored any goals and they conceded a lot of them, but they've obviously just made the change, and so they're a little bit of an unknown for me, where it's just sort of like I might sort of rethink my thoughts, where obviously previously I've been happy to sort of, you know, go at Millwall with sort of armbands and everything, where I might sort of rethink that a little bit. But I think, you know, at the moment, unless they change anything, Stoke are obviously the main ones that I'm going to look at, and then particularly attackers against Plymouth, like we discussed, and I still think to a degree attackers against Huddersfield as well.
Would mainly agree. I think all season I've been saying that Sheffield Wednesday haven't been terrible at the back. It's going to be really interesting, because if QPR end up getting, I don't know, a couple of wins from that hard run, and then they'll obviously have a set of easier fixtures, they could stay up. It's crazy to think about. 2 months you'd have gone off. You thought you basically knew it, who it was, or you thought, oh, if anyone falls, it'll be Huddersfield, and now that Stoke getting in the drop is pretty crazy, really.
And you know, we talk about them. I know I said to you their next 8 fixtures, there aren't many you'd like in there either. They play Middlesbrough at home, Leeds away, Preston away, Norwich at home, Hull away, Huddersfield at home, West Brom at home, Swansea away. There's a couple of decent ones in there, but mostly it's sort of games like, particularly in the next 4 or 5, where you're like, yeah, I don't want any of those.
Yeah, and like I said, I think it was midweek when I watched Stoke and QPR, and it was a bad game. I know Stoke won, and that was massive for them, but there was no quality on that pitch. So, well, no, you know, like previous years, Stoke have always had players who could win a game on their own. I'm not sure they've got it at the minute.
Yeah, I think it's looking tough for them at the moment. Obviously, any team down there can turn it around. We've seen, you know, Sheffield Wednesday. It was sort of like Sheffield Wednesday, QPR in particular. It was more like, have they given themselves too much to do? But Huddersfield, you sort of looked at them and thought, oh, they're in massive trouble. They've managed to turn it around to a degree. Like Plymouth started slipping down quite close to it, and they've you know, sort of then pulled away a little bit. So it's shown, you know, a team can do it. It's just sort of, you know, I think they're going to need to possibly weather a few more difficult results, and then sort of really look to mount a recovery after that. If they could pick up any points in the next sort of four or five games that are all against like sort of, you know, top eight-ish teams or whatever, that then that's great. But it feels like it's going to be tough for them at the moment, barring something changing. And I think that they're the sort of one at the moment with the way it's going that you sort of look at players against them. And like I know people are going to look at Stoke players Middlesbrough players this week. And it's going to be tough to sort of not play them. But yeah, I just think it's interesting. And the fact it's condensed so much with Sheffield Wednesday and QPR making up ground has certainly made it more interesting for the run-in now. Which is what we really like with sort of battles at both ends. But yeah, that's sort of the main thing, just sort of, you know, having a look at those, and particularly, like I said, just sort of getting an idea of sort of thoughts and feelings about various teams and where they might be sort of good or bad. But we'll get into the questions now. Thank you to everyone who sort of sent us a question on Twitter. We've got, I think, six questions to go through in no particular order. FPL Frog has asked, I don't really want one, but who would your Borough defender of choice be? It's a very good question.
I think I'd want Engel, but Thomas is just
There's just that rotation at the moment, isn't there?
So you know who I'm going to suggest?
It's going to be Luke Ayling, isn't it?
It is.
And I see the logic, particularly if you go in there. You know, you see him sort of getting up high and support the attacks as well and everything. Like, he's just as good a pick as anyone else on that team. So I think particularly... As you know, I've been a fan of Engel. I think he's grown the season well, but I think with him currently rotating a bit more with Thomas, I think for me it seems like if you're going to go with a Borough defender, it's going to be Ayling at this point. Luke Gaffer Irons said, outside of Stoke and Rotherham, do you think the mid-table clubs are the teams to target now? In Borough, Watford, Bristol City, etc. I was sort of looking at these teams yesterday evening as the teams that quite possibly have nothing to play for now. They're the only teams that aren't really involved in one of the battles at either end. And it's the group of teams on 44 points, which is Watford, Bristol City, Middlesbrough and Cardiff. Middlesbrough can obviously keep their faint hopes alive by winning their game in hand, but they... As discussed sort of previously, they need to put a run together to sort of have any relevance left in their season. But what do you think about the idea of targeting those teams that potentially have less to play for?
I don't know. I think you need to maybe look at it for two or three more weeks.
A little bit early.
Because we've seen it like a couple of seasons. Swansea used to be excellent under Martin towards the end of the season, didn't they?
Yeah.
Like some of these teams, like it wouldn't surprise me if like a Bristol City just became like really good because they don't have anything to play for. I can see the logic because if these teams start not really bothering, like, funning the Sun games.
Yeah.
Like, Middlesbrough could quite easily do that, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't hate it, but the teams at the bottom are down there for a reason. Yes, they're going to be fighting, but they're probably not as good, especially if you've got top players against them.
I think it's something to start thinking about, but I think it's probably a touch early for that, because I think teams will still be, they'll be sort of still looking upwards. So, like, if we put a really good run together, we might be able to get into this battle. Like, particularly you think about some of those teams, that's the way they'll think. It's the way a team like Watford would be looking to think. It's the way the team like Middlesbrough would be looking to think. Where, and I think, there might be an element of like, okay, let's make sure there's no chance of us getting dragged into it at the bottom as well. But I think, like, that sort of group is obviously sort of the first one you get to in terms of like, okay, who could be sort of on the beach. It's probably a touch early for it at this point. Non-stop FPL. So your main takeaways from the Leeds-Leicester match. Do Leicester have anything to worry about? I think we've covered that more than enough. Shedaboy has asked, best away days midfielder apart from Philogene, Smodix, Somerville and Clark. So that's away days in 35 midfielders. Obviously, that's assuming Jack Clark is back by then. We're recording Sunday night. I know he was due to have another scan on Monday, but they were hopeful that he might only miss the weekend's game. But obviously, depends on the outcome of that scan. But assuming he's all right, away days in 35 to pair with Philogene, Smodic, Somerville and Clark.
About Ipswich midfielder.
Possibly, although with them, it's always a little bit of concern about sort of the rotation. Ian Poveda or Anthony Masava, just throwing Sheffield Wednesday away at Rotherham out there.
About Southampton, who do you think?
I think that's probably a more logical one than Anthony Masaba is a Southampton mid.
Who plays though?
The most reliable one, and you know there is some upside. There is probably Stuart Armstrong. He's on enough of the set pieces. Is more likely to play. Obviously, you might see something in midweek that changes things, like, you know, I've sort of mentioned, or people might be thinking about, if Adam Armstrong, for example, picks up an issue. Someone like David Brooks is the most likely to come into the team on the right-hand side, and that sort of changes things. So I think it might change a little bit in midweek, but I think at this moment in time, I'd probably be looking at someone like Stuart Armstrong from them. And just looking to see if there's anything else that sort of really jumps out. Yeah, if you felt sort of particularly good about Middlesbrough mid, whether that's sort of someone like Azaz, McGree, Greenwood, like maybe that, but it's tough to sort of pick them out at the moment, I think. And the other one, I guess, is, you know, we've sort of talked about him numerous times, is Carvalho. Preston is obviously not a great game, but West Brom wasn't a great game, a great fixture on paper, and he scored a great goal in that game. Or if you feel particularly strongly, and it's another one that might be influenced by the FA Cup, in the Wilfred Nonto Dan James discussion.
Yeah.
That's the other one that sort of jumps out. Ski House 78 said, love the pods, chaps. Thank you very much. Time to ditch Adam Armstrong. I feel like that there's a lot of people sort of feeling a particular way about Adam Armstrong because of the last sort of two or three games.
If he starts becoming a rotation risk, he has to go.
Yeah. I think that's the thing is, I think for the moment, like right now, you have to make a decision that we can't really prescribe. Is just how do you feel? Like, are you sick and tired of sort of waiting and seeing, like, has he now had his rest and he's just going to play again? Or is he going to be more of a rotation issue? Like, if you just don't want to deal with that, if you're like, no, he might start, but I just want rid, that's fine. Then, you know, you can move him on. If you're sort of like, well, if he's going to be back in the team regularly, I still want him, then you're probably going to have to wait and see for another sort of couple of game weeks at least whether he's going to stay in the team. But I think sort of, you know, make the decision and sort of be bold with it, or be aggressive with it. Whichever one decision you're making, make it confidently.
Yeah, like go Ugbo.
Yes. that was one for me where obviously I did mention Ugbo on the last pod.
Do you know what? The last few weeks you've debated getting Gallagher and Ugbo. And you've got
two picks that on the face of it seem insane, and yet they would have been great. They'd be great picks.
So let me know your next one, Angus, and I'll bring you in.
That and my first sub with the last two game weeks being Rutter first sub and Carvalho first sub. It's like the two things that people need to know from me: my next striker punt and my first sub. actually, let me look while you said that. I'll come up with my striker punt for the week. We'll make it a thing. Actually, while I'm thinking of that, you can start the final question, which is from Noax Petron, who said, how would an overhaul look? So if you were overhauling now, who would you be looking to include?
Probably three Borough, because the double. What do you reckon? Azaz, Ayling. I don't know who to pick up from.
Yeah, I mean, Latilath came off the bench. I'd probably look elsewhere and reassess that sort of closer to the double, because I think if someone like, you know, Latilath is back, or if he's not, like if he sort of gets injured again and Fors is going to play reliably, then you might want Fors. So I think that one would probably be sort of like go with a couple and leave yourself open to be able to sort of go to whichever one sort of stands out close to the time.
I think your team would be pretty similar to what you have, unless you've got like a massive difference to the template team, because there's a reason why these players are popular. You might not have that many hole. You might drop like a Philogene or something, but or you might go without an Armstrong, but you'd have two leads. You'd have Dewsbury Hall. You'd probably have Davis, Walker Peters.
There's one for you actually on an overhaul, an overhaul punt. This is not my striker pick of the week, because I'm just going to stick with my Ugbo pick from last week. He's playing Rotherham this week. Like, is Jed Wallace.
I like that. Yeah, West Brom are going massively under the radar. Yeah,
but Jed Wallace, I thought he actually looked all right in what wasn't the best game at times against Hull. Big game for both, tough game for both, and I think it reflected in the play. I think it was a bit tense at times. Like, I think it looked like two teams who understood the sort of significance of the game and everything. But someone like him, you know, I think Thomas Asante, I think it's sort of like could be as much as 5 weeks out for him. Could be as little as two, could be as much as five. But I think, you know, Jed Wallace, I think would be an interesting one on an overhaul at this point.
Yeah. I definitely think West
there's not
Brom
too much
are going under.
too much else I'd sort of say. Yeah, I mean, West Brom is the real sort of, I think if you were overhauling, they're the sort of team, maybe picking a couple of them would be sort of the big way to swing against. I mean, people can do it anyway, but I think particularly if you were overhauling, it feels like an obvious way to go. Yeah, I can't think of much else that you'd really sort of look at on an overhaul.
Maybe Coventry.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not sort of necessarily the best point for the entry point for the West Brom game, but you've got Rotherham at home as the next game. Took Watford away. They could have a double at some point, like. So whether that's someone like Van Evijk or O'Hare or Hadji Wright.
Yeah. Maybe that's your punt. Get rid of Armstrong, go Hadji Wright.
Yeah. That's the other one I'll give you on the overhaul. Josh Sargent. I know he didn't score at the weekend, yeah. But so a couple of home games, well, decent, you know, runs coming up. I mean, Middlesbrough struggled a little bit, but Sunderland home, Middlesbrough away, Rotherham home, Stoke away, next four. So, yeah, Josh Sargent. Like I said, if I was going with my sort of, you know, tipping up a striker, like I like Josh Sargent or something like that, I'd also take a short-term punt on Ugbo still if I were doing that. Rotherham away, Plymouth at home, next two, and then potentially move it on. But yeah, so that's all the questions. Anything else you particularly want to think we need to cover off before sort of the end?
No, I don't think so.
So obviously this week is FA Cup. Keep an eye on that in terms of shaping up any sort of potential blanks and doubles the rest of the way. You've got Coventry are playing Maidstone. On Monday night, Tuesday, you've got Bournemouth against Leicester and Blackburn against Newcastle. And then on Wednesday, Chelsea, Leeds and Liverpool, Southampton.
Might get a couple of teams through. I reckon there'll be a shock. And
yeah,
you have to think Coventry will be Maidstone. You'd fancy that one.
Yeah, and then we'll see what happens in terms of sort of rearrangements and making no commitments after the way it went previously.
Just say it could go anywhere. Could bring it forward.
It could bring it forward, could just stay in the same week, could go later, anything could happen. but yeah, so in all seriousness as well, that would also mean, obviously, the suggestion would be don't make any early moves. No, those are some important teams that will be involved. You think about in terms of coverage at the moment, and Blackburn, Leeds, and Southampton are obviously significant teams at this point. So, I think it's and Leicester, of course. So it's important to wait, I think, until those games are done. But yeah, so that's everything from us. We will be back again with you sort of next weekend. If anything comes up, we'll sort of try and communicate it, whether that's any sort of fixture news, injury news will be out as normal late in the week. And apart from that, all that's left to say is thank you for listening and goodbye.
Goodbye.